Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey, I got news for you. You're getting older, and so are your parents. And it can be complicated. It can be messy. It can be upsetting. Today, we're going to share with you a little bit of how that is developing, I guess you could say.
Yeah, because we had a podcast a few months ago. So this is kind of an update and some more things that we've learned.
We're in the car. Thanks for going for a ride with us, like literally and figuratively. Dealing with aging parents brings on a very complex set of emotions. I think it's one of the hardest things you're ever going to have to do, especially managing, I think, a relationship where one of your parents is suffering from a debilitating, slow progressing, or maybe fast progressing, or maybe unpredictably progressing disease like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or dementia. Any number of diseases. Our specific scenario at the moment is Brett's father has Alzheimer's, and we did a previous episode. We'll link to it in the show notes because I think that might be a helpful one to start with if you're experiencing this. And in any event, I just want to acknowledge every one of you who has to face this. And if you have a parent alive, you may likely have to face this. And it's difficult. It's really hard. There's so many things you have to cope with because it's not just this person going through a disease. It's so much more complex in that there's a history. There's a history that you have with that parent. There's a personality change in our situation. Again, we're going to speak a lot about dementia and Alzheimer's, but I'm just going to speak on a little bit, Brett, and then I'm going to turn it over to you if you don't mind. Because sure. I don't want to say I'm an outsider, but like it's Brett's father. And so what I've noticed, first of all, when I came into the family, like his father is the definition of patriarch. Like he was a patriarch for this county. He's a patriarch for thousands of boys and even families that came under his wing, really. Like he's the most protective, caring, also at times controlling individual you ever met. Like it was Bob's way or the highway, but it was always in other people's best interest.
He was a football coach because you just said that he was protective of boys. So I want to.
Oh.
So he was a high school football coach. So that's why over the years he, you know, has come in contact and mentored thousands of young men.
Yes, I did forget to include that. But it was always not about winning. It was always about like raising fine young men. And he's just like one of those individuals, like an old school football coach, like you would imagine, where it's like his way or the highway for the most part. And that meant in their family, it was still like that even many years into our relationship. Like you wouldn't say something that you thought might piss your dad off or like go against him because it was like, you know, Bob knew best for everybody. His brother, Brett has one brother, and even his mom, like Bob decided when people were going on vacation and what time you're waking up and, you know, like for the family in particular. And he ran the family a little bit like, I'd say a little bit like a team.
Yeah. I mean, if you've ever been part of a team, it's, you know, you got to have one person at the top.
Yeah.
That's how things work. That's how winning, you know, he never worried about the winning because he knew it'd take care of itself as long as everybody fell in line with what his goal was. Like he put together the system and it worked. But growing up that way, both being a player under him and then also, you know, being his son, that's the only way he knew. So that's the way the household was run. So I learned from a very young age that it was like, it's his way. That's the way we're doing it.
That's it. Yeah. I think it was probably a little bit of a shock when I came into the family because I'd be like, oh, no, we don't. Like I would challenge Bob. I'd be like, well, you're wrong, Bob. And people would be like, oh. You know, two know-it-alls in a room. It's probably also why you're attracted to me. But that's a whole nother psychological topic we won't get into.
That just got weird.
I know it did. But my point is this. Like, it's been really strange to have this person who is in charge of everything. His personality has changed because he doesn't have the mental capacity, ability, if you will, to lead. And so, you know, it's like suddenly the leader can't lead. Suddenly the leader has to be taken care of. And it's been a real shift in everyone's just role, and who you are changes when the person who you love changes. And I've just been thinking about how hard this has been on Brett's mom, who married a protector, who married someone who is like, he's a lot like Brett. You know, all he does is dote on his wife and wants to take care of her and buy her gifts and protect her and think about her. Like, everything revolves around her, right? And now suddenly she's no longer married to that man. Now she's married to someone who, you know, he hasn't lost his speech, but he's not talking because he is far enough along to realize something's not right and to want to cover it up. So he's not speaking because he doesn't want to use the wrong word, say the wrong thing, or maybe he's not following along. It's hard to say, but he's gotten much more quiet. He's gotten much sweeter. He looks scared sometimes. I hate that look.
Yeah, they call it the loop, where he is comfortable with like three topics. I can tell you what they are. They're weather. There is Brock's going to play football in the fall. And basically,
how your mom's doing.
How my mom's doing.
Oh, and the dogs. So it's four things.
And then the dogs. Those four things. And they kind of just rotate. And
when he says loop, like, it's literally, we're at the stage right now where that loop repeats all day long. Those same four questions happen back to back to back. He's either silent, or when he asks a question 10 minutes later, it's, hey, what's going on with football? Right? Which is, you know, that means he's a little bit aware that it's still unresolved. You know, checking on his wife. Like, do you think Debbie needs anything? Do you think Debbie's okay? You think, you know, he's always talking about his wife. And we mentioned that because right now she took a little vacation to see her sister because caregivers need that break, right? But, oh my gosh, she's out of his sight. And that's his security blanket. So he's just obsessing every 5 minutes. Like, how's Debbie? How's Debbie? How's Debbie? When's Debbie coming home? When's Debbie coming home? And then the dogs. They've got these two dogs. How do you feel about those two dogs, Brett Johnson?
I don't like the two dogs. I'm a dog lover. And yeah, they're great dogs. They should be with young kids and a family that can run around and play with them.
How do you feel about the fact that your parents decided to get two puppies
in the middle of all this?
Yeah.
When every book says, don't change, you know, keep everything very similar. You don't want high stress. There's no more stress than having two hyper... What are they called? They're the Labradoodles?
Labradoodles. They're like oversized Labradoodles.
They're huge. And one of them's a freak of nature. If he played sports, he'd be a superstar. He'd be a pro athlete. And he can jump and he can...
Get on counters and jump on your head.
And it's just... You go over there and my dad doesn't know how to...
Control
the situation and to calm the situation. So all he knows is to get mad at him, which then they think he's playing. So they just get riled up even more. It's a complete scene for the first 10 minutes.
It's a show
once somebody walks in for the first 10 minutes. So
and
now
Brett, every time he's like, Brett's like, why do they have these dogs? Oh, that's the other thing is his dad is, you know, again, his cognitive abilities have greatly declined. So when the dogs bark, or they play, because that's what puppies do. Well, they're not even puppies now. They're like a year and a half or something. But when they play, he thinks they are in an all-out bloodbath to kill each other. So he gets very upset and goes crazy and tries to separate them. And he thinks that they're trying to kill each other when they're just playing. So it's very, very stressful. And we would love to remove those freaking dogs.
Well, I understand it. And we probably will get some comments about this.
Yeah.
But I think dogs are the most amazing thing ever. And they're awesome for families. But once you reach a certain age, you don't go buy a new puppy when that puppy is going to outlive you. Because now you've just added one more thing that your loved ones have to do when you go.
Yeah.
And I understand, like, oh, well, what if you need a companion or something?
Adopt a dog.
Then adopted 7 or 8 year old dog or something. There's plenty of dogs.
We're just venting.
Yeah, now we're just giving you some advice based
on these are the conversations we have constantly, which is like, why? But you know, it doesn't really do us any good to say why, because here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
But a lot of these things, and thank you. I know some of you guys are going to offer solutions or try to offer suggestions. Trust me, we have gone through all of them. And there are reasons why we still have the dogs. Okay. So, but let's talk about some very, if you're going through this, some things you can expect. Number one, you need to know that you're very normal if you have a degree of resentment, whether that's a parent dying from any illness or suffering from a disease or any family member. There's a level of resentment when you feel that you've been shortchanged or robbed of something. Like COVID is making people feel very resentful, like resentful, not necessarily towards a person, but the situation. Like you're resentful because you had plans, you had dreams, you had ideas, and this
people
is
getting married. You know, there's weddings that have been postponed.
Yeah.
There's, you know, your family trip that you save up for every single summer to go, you can't go.
I was just reading a Yelp review someone had written about a gym. Okay, it was a 24-hour fitness that wasn't open 24 hours. And they were so angry, and they literally use the word resentful. I am so resentful of the fact that you call yourself 24-hour fitness, and I showed up, and you're not open after midnight, this particular club. So resentment is something that we feel when we have an expectation or we thought something was going to go a certain way, and then it doesn't. And don't think of yourself as a bad person because you resent a situation where, you know, no one could have controlled it, or you have no control, or even the other person has no control. Like you might have someone who you're caring for who has cancer, and you might feel very guilty that you feel resentment towards them, but it's not towards them likely that you feel it. It's more so you feel it about the situation, you know?
Yeah. The resentment part is a little bit hard. I feel bad.
Let's talk about the resentment you feel. What do you feel when I bring up that word?
Well, I'm resentful that he's going to miss, that his other grandchildren are going to miss out on having him. So I guess, I don't know if that's resentful.
Grief is,
it's like,
sad.
It's just, yeah, it's more sad that, you know, our kids are older and they got to experience their grandfather. And
yeah.
My brother's kids are just not going to get that same experience.
Yeah.
Like my brother has two younger boys. And that my dad is not going to be able to go like watch their football games and know like what's going on and coach them and be there for them and give them advice. And, you know, yeah. It's just that's kind of like the saddest part for me. And the fact that he retired after coaching and helping so many kids, and it was just time for him and my mom to just be able to spend some time together and travel because they love to travel.
So he coached up until what age?
So 4 years ago, so 72.
So he was, when we say a full-time coach, like this man woke up at 5 a.m. and even though he wasn't teaching, he was just a high school football coach in the end. They kind of just let him do that.
Yeah, he was a public school teacher and didn't teach classes. It's unheard of. Like they had to make like a special position for him because they just don't do that. You know, when you're in public education, the coaches and teachers they're either walk-ons or they teach at the school. You know, they teach math or they teach history and English, and then they go and coach.
So he just coached, but he would do that from 5 a.m. until like 7 o'clock at night. Because all he would do is try to get kids scholarships or walk-ons or just other types of opportunities, just constantly thinking about these kids. It was an obsession. So when he did finally retire, I think if we were talking about resentment, and not to speak on your mom's behalf, but certainly she had anticipated, she said this to us, that, you know, they'd be able to travel the world and go do fun things. And like, you know, here she for 50 years was like the ideal football wife and sacrificed all these things so that someday they could go and like really like live their lives. And he came home, he retired really mainly because his Alzheimer's was making it
hard for him to coach.
Yeah. So there's resentment on her part. And this might be an uncomfortable question, but I'll ask it anyways. I know the answer. I have to imagine that we had so many plans this year to travel.
Yeah.
And just to live in other places. And we've talked about on the podcast, like all the things we were talking about doing.
Yeah.
How does it make you feel? Because when I've said to you, like a couple weeks ago, I said, let's just go to such and such. we'll wear masks, we'll risk getting COVID, let's just go to this here or there. And you were like, I can't.
Yeah. Right now we can't, just because there's so many things up in the air. And in order for me to have a good time or to enjoy myself, I got to be a, not have so many things going on. There's always going to be stuff going on. But to have so many uncertainties and so many loose ends not tied, it really feels like a hard thing to do and enjoy ourselves. And just because we're kind of at a crossroads right now, I think, with my dad and just the situation, because it's gotten so much worse in the last, you know, couple months, because unfortunately with this situation, it's not like cancer or, you know, a condition like that where you deteriorate and then you go and you kind of know you have stage 4, doctors can give you like a timeline. Like yeah. This, there's no timeline. Yeah. Like literally he could stay in the position that he's at right now for another year.
Yeah.
Or he could decline more. And then, so you don't know whether he's going to stay at home with the caregiver or if he's going to be at a home with the caregiver. It's just, there's so many uncertainties.
And your mom, it's really taken a toll on her mental and physical health. And that's one thing that, you know, you can't underestimate how deadly this is for the caregiver. You just can't. And that's one thing that's been also equally really, really hard on us.
Especially a caregiver in our case, that's not their instinct to be a caregiver, because she was always taken care of.
She was the taken care of.
Yeah, by my dad. So it's a role reversal at age in the 70s for them. So imagine going your entire life and it's one way, it's this certain way. And then all of a sudden, within 2 years, it's completely changed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have to kind of play with that and see.
It's hard to manage it too, because it's like we're managing two people right now. A lot, I mean, big time managing two people, because we don't want his mom to decline in a way that she shouldn't be declining. Like her health, she should be in ideal health. And she's like one of the smartest women I've ever met. And she's so sweet. But like this is really taking a toll on her. And we have to manage that. And we can't just worry about Bob. We really have to worry about Debbie too, and trying to figure out like the best way to take care of both of them. It's very taxing. You know, everyone means well, but it also means that there's a lot of mental demands. It's not just caring for one parent, it's caring for two parents at the same time. It's very demanding when you have those things, plus your own adult children living with you. And on top of that, our marriage and our career and our friends and our staff, and everyone needs attention and everyone needs love and everyone needs to be acknowledged and everyone needs, you know, we have friends who are like, hey, when are we going to get together? It's like, I hate to say this, but you're last on the list right now, because family has got to come first. And if any of my friends are listening, I love you. Please keep checking in on me and invite me. Please don't take it personal that we have a lot to take care of. And I would say, in, I don't know how you feel about this, I feel like it's family and then it's staff.
Yeah.
I'm going to take care of my staff, because my friends, if they know me and they love me and they care about me, they're going to understand, like, I've got to help my staff through. We have to help our staff through this. And it's been really hard on them. Not the whole family thing, but just COVID and all the change. And we've had a lot of change in our workplace, and it's hard to show up for them, but we have to figure out how to manage our time and energy. And our staff is the next closest thing to family.
For sure. Well, with that order that you just said is where we've been spending our time for the last 4 months.
Yeah.
It's been family and staff. And to kind of just tie the knot with the whole resentment and just the difference in roles and what you can expect.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the exact statistic, but I remember reading the books regarding, you know, the caregivers, and there's a great percentage that they typically pass before the person that has the illness.
Yeah.
Just because it's so taxing and on them, and it's such a stress, and, you know, and it's also sad because
I mean, we've seen it attack your mom's immune system.
Yeah, big time. And she's not the most, like, she doesn't have the strongest immune system in the world to start with. Uh-huh. That's my dad, which is kind of ironic about this. But it's just a hard situation to navigate through. And so we really have to watch her, or we risk, you know, really losing both parents.
So that's kind of a synopsis. But now we wanted to share with you some things that are working for us and that are making this tolerable and doable and manageable. The first of which is talking about it. So in the past, I can tell, like in 2 seconds, I can tell by the way you close the door, what mood you're in. I can tell by the way you walk in and up the stairs. If I'm downstairs in the living room and I see you go by, I just tell by the way you hold your jaw that you are thinking about something and it's intense. And I'll say, what's up? And you're like, nothing. I just know immediately. But you've done a lot better job of letting me ask a few more questions and then opening up and telling me what's disturbing or upsetting. Yeah.
A lot of times it's definitely not trying to hide anything. It might be just because I'm just coming from their house, or I just got off a phone call or text messaging with my brother, and it's like, it's just too much all at once. And then I come in the house and it's like, you don't really want to keep talking about it. So that's probably.
So I force you to.
Yeah. But it's, I think one of the biggest things is, you know, to having a loving spouse like you that is really helping. And, you know, the first one to go to Google and do research and help.
Buy the books.
Yeah. And then talk about it. And then we have a group text messaging thread with our...
For comedy relief.
With my brother and his wife. And it's just pure comedy.
That's another important tip, is you've got to find the humor in this. And I've always found it to be one of my favorite things to do, is to like kind of make fun of my parents with my siblings. I think that's so fun. I've also encouraged Sierra and Brock to feel free to do that, as long as we don't have to hear it, because I just know like that's such a great way to bond with your siblings.
Brock and Sierra make fun of me 24/7.
I know. And I actually partake in that too. It's a good time. But I think that really does bring siblings together, when you can be like, kind of like, I don't know, connect on how annoying or funny or whatever hilarious your parents are. And right now that's been a great source of comedic relief. Like Brett, you've had the most real hardcore laughing sessions are when you're repeating things that your brother has told you and you just die.
Both of us. Because we live away from him, but we kind of ham and egg it.
So you both live like 10 minutes one way and 10 minutes the other way.
Yeah. So we kind of pick times. Like he gets up, he's got real young kids. So he gets up real early and he goes and gets his workout. He always goes over there in the morning. And then I typically or work in the afternoon up at the office, or I'm out running errands and I can stop by in the afternoon. So that works really well.
So comedy is a good point. Communication. So back to communication. That means you got to talk to your spouse about it. And communication also means getting information in. So it's the books that we're reading, like the 36-hour day, or I think it's called Creating Memories. I'll put the two top books that I've found so far, and I'll put those in our resources. And it's listening to podcasts on Alzheimer's, and it's reading blog posts and listening to YouTube videos and understanding the ways to manage this, not just to help take care of him, but to take care of us. And then it's talking to each other. And it's also, next point, talking to a therapist, which you did recently.
Yeah, because it was really starting to just
be too heavy.
Yeah, and just weighing on my brain all the time. And I knew that wasn't healthy. And I needed to sort it out and figure out my feelings. And there's nothing better than going to an EMDR therapist or a therapist and just, you know, one session, I felt so much better.
What was the belief that you were working through, like that you had to fix it?
Yeah, I had to fix it. And, you know, basically going back to like, there's certain things you just can't fix. They're not yours to fix. And
yeah, I'll tell you, if any of you are dealing with a partner who is just not themselves right now, because they have a parent that's going through this, get that partner into therapy, because Brett was pretty intolerable for a couple of months there. And wow, gosh, it was just like night and day. And that, just that one session of doing EMDR on that particular thought, wow, it's made a huge difference. Speaking of therapy, I always think for those who are just starting out, like if you're nervous about this, or maybe just it's not in the budget, or you just don't want to go and sit down in the therapist's office, one super duper affordable way for you to experience the relief that you get by talking to a therapist is using a company like Talkspace. And I'm super proud to tell you that Talkspace is a sponsor of The Chalene Show. And here's why Talkspace is so cool. It's online therapy. It's super convenient. It's super affordable. And this is just a very simple way to make lasting change in your life with the support of someone who's qualified to help you, a licensed therapist. Okay, so here's how Talkspace works. They will match you with a licensed therapist based on your needs and your preferences. They will send you a licensed therapist Then you can send your therapist texts or audios, pictures, video messages from your phone. Again, you don't have to go to anyone's office. You don't have to do a Zoom or anything. Talkspace will match you with a licensed therapist based on your needs and preferences. They have thousands of therapists trained in, over, get this, 40 different specialties. So no matter how specific your needs are, they will match you with the right person. All right, so here's the deal. Bottom line, we all need to talk to someone. Talkspace has licensed therapists for you to talk to get the support that you need. As a listener of The Chalene Show, you get $100 off your first month at Talkspace. Just go to Talkspace.com and download the app. And don't forget, you want to use the code Chalene. That's going to give you $100 off your first month. And of course, it's a great way to show support for the show. All right, guys, back to the conversation. All right, the next thing, again, assuming we're speaking about Alzheimer's and dementia, is a tactic. And that is to remember that they can't help it.
Yep.
And so getting angry and using reason or rationale or things that you used to be able to do. Like, why would you get mad at a child? Would you ever get mad at a toddler?
We're asking that, you know, what's the weather going to be? You know, a bunch of times, or, you know,
the kid that says why?
Yeah, when's dad gonna be home? You know, whatever, like that, whatever loop they would get on. You know, it's just
doesn't do any good. It's respond in love and think about the regression. Imagine your parent as being a child, and to have the same compassion and love and patience and sense of humor that you would with a child. You know, it's so hard to look at someone who is an adult and who's always been the authority and to not think to yourself, like, I just told you this. But to say something like that is so hurtful and so harmful because they still have emotion and they still feel anger and they feel embarrassed and they feel ashamed, and that can pull out emotions you've never seen in them before. You can have a parent who's never been emotional or who used to be emotional. Now they're not. It just changes emotion. So, and I don't mean this to be disparaging, but you almost have to use the same kind of communication tactics that you would with a toddler. And I don't mean like speaking baby talk, but like answering the same.
You change the subject.
That was our next point, is changing the subject. So especially if you have a parent who's on a loop, you change the subject. And so like Brett's dad right now, because his mom's been away for a couple of days, he's like, she's coming back tomorrow, right? She's coming back tomorrow.
Meanwhile, he doesn't know that there's 7 days in a week. He doesn't know when she left. He doesn't have a concept of time or day or any of that kind of stuff. So as soon as she left on a Wednesday, and she's gone for like 7 to 10 days. And the reason why there's a spread is because she's doing some things over there. But anyway, he doesn't know what that means. He doesn't know what 7 or 10. So every day, starting on Thursday, he's like, yeah, she's been gone for a long time. She's already been gone for like 6 days. I think she comes back tomorrow.
Yeah, he just doesn't know.
He doesn't know.
Brett will just change the subject. He's like, yep, mom would be home soon. Yep. And then just quickly change the subject. Like, he's like, well, you know, he wants to ask more questions about that. But it's pretty easy to distract him, because you talk about the things where he does know and does get into it. Like, Brett can talk about anything that relates to sports and the past. So if Brett talks about, which is probably fun for you, your glory days, your high school or college, for you or your brother, your dad is like, boom, he's right there.
Yeah, not just even the glory days. I mean, obviously he can follow those stories better, but if you just change the subject to something that takes his mind off it, whether it's the upcoming football season or it's like coaching or anything like that. And the other good thing to do in terms of with what's going on with my mom being gone, is that I just turn around and just like, oh yeah, you know, mom's over there. She's seeing a doctor. She's getting healthy. Because his primary concern is always her being healthy and her, you know, state of mind and stuff like that. So if I can, but he'll forget. He'll forget 10 minutes that's why she's over there. So you just kind of have to reiterate.
Remember, the intent is to, especially in this stage, the intent in our replies is not to mislead him, it's to calm him. Yep. And so suggestion that we learned from reading the book, The 36-Hour Day, is you keep giving different responses until you find the one
he likes,
that calms him and that makes him go like, oh, okay, that's what I was hoping for. And then you just keep repeating that. Now, that might feel like you're lying, but it's not. It's the kindest thing you can do, because you're getting them to relax.
And if they don't like the response, this is where people will fail. And I read this in the book, and you don't understand it until you're in it, is that they'll say something that doesn't bring down his anxiety.
Let's give him an example.
Or stress.
So like if he were to say, okay, your mom's coming back tomorrow. And if you were being honest, you would say, no, Dad, she's not going to be home for another week.
Yeah. Well, how long is a week? Yeah, she won't be back for like 7 days, maybe six. And I could see like that would start to make him upset. Then what you do is you quickly just change the narrative and you're like, oh, yeah, you know what, though? She texted. She probably will come home tomorrow or something.
Yeah, you just keep looking and playing with it until you find the answer that makes them happy, and you just stick with that, and then repeat it.
And then you just repeat it when they start talking about that loop, because they're going to, trust me, 100% thing that's going to happen is whatever the loop is, it's coming back. So
it's like a child who, when you're on a trip in the car or you're driving somewhere to see grandma, and they're like, are we there yet? Are we there yet? And I remember my parents would say, go to sleep, and when you wake up, we'll be there. Yeah. And like that was the answer that was like, okay, that works for me. And next is you want to limit the amount of room for error. So as each day, month, week, etc. progresses, you have to understand that what they could once do is not coming back. And you just have to accept that. And you have to set them up for success, not for failure. So you limit the amount of decisions they have to make. You have to limit, like if they have to get dressed on their own, well then don't have all their clothes available to them. Just have what they're going to be wearing laid out. And then eventually they aren't going to be able to dress themselves. We're not there yet. But it's just laying out one outfit. It's laying everything out for them, as opposed to, you know, maybe they've been able to brush their teeth and remember to do all those things in the past, and now you're expecting them to do that. Well, lay it out and offer those triggers for them instead of ask. Like the other day, your dad was staying with us down at the beach, and I whispered to Brett, do you think he's hungry? And he goes, I could ask him. And I said, well, he goes, no, I'm not going to ask him. I'm just going to make him food. Because to ask him,
he has to think about it. Am I hungry? What does that mean? It's a whole thing. There's too much processing going through. I know he's hungry. I know he'll eat whatever I put in front of him. So I'll just make food. And that completely eliminates a thought that he has to make. He does not have to make a decision. All he has to do is eat the food.
And he doesn't even have to answer a question.
Yep.
The next thing I would talk about, which I think since the last time we recorded this, your dad may have still been driving. Limited.
I think that was one of the topics that we were talking about. Like that was, we were taking the driving away from him.
So we knew we had to take his driving privileges away. It's crazy to think how much he's declined since then.
Yeah.
Crazy. Because at that point, there was like a little bit of debate among some family members whether, in fact, he really needed his license taken away. And I was like, oh, hell no. He needs his license taken away. And to think how much worse he is now.
Yeah.
And that was, I don't know how long ago.
4 months or so. It was before.
Jeez.
It was before.
That's crazy.
Everything got shut down.
Yeah. So the way we did that was just knowing his personality. We knew that if we took him to a doctor is required by law to report that he shouldn't be driving. And so I had a conversation with the physician beforehand saying, like, this is one of the issues that we want to address. Can you help us address this? And it made it so much easier for a doctor who specifically cares for Alzheimer's patients to actually have this conversation. He knew how to have it. He knew how to handle it. He knew exactly what to say.
And then now the loved ones don't have to take the keys away. You can just say, remember the doctor said you can't drive right now. You got to come back and do more tests. And then what happened was, is that we just kept on telling him for that for about a month. And then he just forgot about it.
So again, working with the scenario that we knew would make him happy. If he heard, Bob, your license has been taken away and you're never going to get it back, he would have never stopped obsessing about that. Instead, we used it as a carrot and would tell him, Bob, if we could improve your brain, I mean, we just have to do all the things the doctor said and then we'll retest. You can go back. And if you pass the test, then you'll be able to drive. And so he really focused on that, and it kept him following some of the...
For a while, he's just like, yeah, I got to get this right because I got to be able to drive. I mean, I've been driving my whole life, and I can drive. You see me. I'm the best driver ever. The funny thing about it is that he was a driver's ed teacher, and the man has never got a ticket or an accident in his life, which was like You know, and that's what he was holding on, because he knew that. And he was like, I'm the best driver there is. So that was another kind of like hurdle. He's like, why are you taking the license away from me? I'm a good driver. So we...
He kept showing me his hands. He goes, look, Shalene. He kept showing me his hands. Like, I've got hands. Why can't I drive? Yeah. I'm like, oh, God bless him. But, you know, it wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be. And I believe that is because, number one, we were able to tell him, if you exercise daily, if you're eating right, if you're doing all these things, you're going to improve, Bob. And if you improve, you can test again. So that worked for several months. And in that time, unfortunately, he didn't improve. He declined more. And he knows, I think, now.
Yeah.
So it was a far easier transition using a doctor to help us with that.
Yep. You just have to get very creative. And just like you, when you have like little teeny kids, you know, you're going to need to make like little white lies.
Yeah. Like with Debbie being on vacation to see her sister, she's not seeing, hopefully Bob doesn't listen to this podcast. Joking. She's visiting her sister, but we had to tell Bob that she's there seeing a specialist who can take care of her knee. And that's a story. He likes that story because it's like, oh, it's about taking care of Debbie. Yeah. So, you know, you just have to kind of keep going creatively. Like, what would make this person happy? What would make them relax? What is going to work for them? I guess the only other things I would want to add that are helpful is you have to know, in terms of siblings, like Brett and his brother Rob are completely on the same page. And I think that's probably rare.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak for other people, but Rob and I have been on the same page regarding this pretty much the entire time, on how to handle it. And we both realize we're in totally two different places in our lives too. You and I with as empty nesters, and him with four young kids, 13, you know, 11, 8, and 6. So, I mean, he's got a full-time family that he's taking care of, and it's hard for...
And he still does a lot.
And he still does a ton. He's still getting over there. He still goes over there and sees them every day. And so it's just... But
that might not be the case for you. Like, you might have siblings who you're angry with because
they live out of state.
They're living out of state, or maybe they live right next door to your mom and they're not doing enough, or they're doing too much and you think they're enabling. You know, it's just really, really rare to have family members who are on the same page. So here's what I would say. Don't let this destroy your family. Don't force your beliefs, what you think is right, what you think someone else should be doing or can afford to do mentally, physically, spiritually, or how they're aligning their priorities. Don't make those things that are true for you true for them. Just love them and accept that it's going to be very rare for family members to all pitch in equally. Some won't do anything. You're going to think that they're selfish and that they're jerks and it's not fair to you and that you're being taken advantage of. But we all just have to do what we know is right, and we can't place our beliefs on other people. That's God's business. That is not your business. You can pray for them. Don't let this destroy your relationship or worsen relationship with family. If there's anything you can do, tell your family members, I understand your situation and I respect it and I love you, and it's okay. We don't have to see eye to eye, and just pray for mom and dad, whatever it is they're doing. And the same is true if you're the family member who's like, I have my own family to take care of. And like you and I were saying the other day, like some families, maybe the husband and wife have said, you know what, our money is going to go towards our children, not taking care of our parents. Like, that's your right. I mean, everyone's different.
Yeah. And everybody had a different relationship with their parents too. Not every sibling had the same relationship with that parent, you know, because I know that's lots of people that, you know, have three or four kids. They might spread 10 years and they're different, you know, everybody. That's one of the things that you learn when you go to therapy and you learn about your childhood and you learn about how things affect everything that happened to you that your siblings saw, or maybe your siblings were part, it affected them differently.
Yeah.
You're not in their shoes, so you don't know how they feel about like what's going on. And then you have to put in, if your sibling is married, their spouse brings in their own, you know, their own facts and what they feel about beliefs about what, how parents and children should be. So,
and ultimately, this is my personal belief, like ultimately your number one responsibility is to your spouse or your partner. and then to your parents. And I know some people don't see it that way. Do you see it that way?
Yes, I do.
I think you do too. So if, like, I have a friend whose sister is married, and so that would be her brother-in-law and her sister, just don't have the same beliefs around supporting their parents. My friend is very, very angry at her sister and her brother-in-law. And because of that, now they're not speaking. And to me, I'm like, isn't your first priority to make sure that she's happy and, you know, this marriage, because she's got children and like that's taken care, like that she honors that first? I don't know. I don't understand that, but that's just me. I just think like I would understand it, and I do understand it. You know, there are things that we did for my grandma that I don't expect my siblings to do. And I'm sure they did things because they lived closer to her that they didn't expect me to
don't,
do. Like, it's just,
don't keep score.
Oh, we'll end it there. Don't keep score. Just keep loving your heart. Pray for families. And we're praying for you guys. Thank you for being along with us on this journey. We really do appreciate you. We love you. We mean it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.